It's the remix. Wah, wah, wah.
Thought. We are for the large shape because it has the impact of the unequivocal. We are for flat forms because they destroy illusion and reveal truth.
Were attempting to make art more than just something to look at. They wanted it to be something to be involved in, something too big to ignore.
It is our function as artists to make the spectator see the world our way, not his way.
Good afternoon, Montreal. You are now listening to Movement Museum here on CKUT 90.3. We have about 366 versions of Do You Think You Can Dance, I believe. And that was the Japanese version.
Do you want to dance?
Do you want to dance?
We were talking about So You Think You Can Dance earlier.
That's like, right. Did I just say So You Think You Can Dance? Do You Want to Dance? We were talking about So You Think You Can Dance earlier. So
that's what we do, is we talk about dance.
Yeah.
So, on the radio.
Yeah.
It's 2:05. My name is Jen Doan. I'm here with Alison Burns and Bettina Forger. We've got a nice show lined up for everybody today. We've got a show review in which Bettina has attended to see the choreographers. So she's going to talk a little bit about that show this past weekend. And we're going to have some discussion on dance in... I guess first one is dance or movement in theater. We'll talk a little bit about that. Alison saw a nice show yesterday at Seagal's, and so we can bring that up and see what we have there in dance and theater and dance or movement in theater. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Anglophone artists working here in Montreal. Bettina is on the board of the ELAN, for those who may or may not know what that is, the English Language Arts Network here in Montreal. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. I think we'll start with the show review, Bettina.
Yes.
How was the choreographers?
It was interesting, and it was more than I bargained for. The Escale Improbable de Montreal ran at the Darling Foundry from September 7th till 11th, and I was there on September 8th. And actually, when I was on the show last week, I announced the choreographers, who performed on September 8th. But what I didn't know, because of the absolutely horrid design of the website, is that it wasn't just this one performance. It was, in fact, three dance performances, a musical guest, en masse were there doing live painting outside. And there was also an interactive art installation. So it was a jam-packed evening.
They wanted to make sure you got enough bang for your buck?
Or? No kidding.
How long were you there for?
I was there till about 10:30, 11.
Okay.
Yeah, I left like just at the last set of the musical performance. So we had basically the choreographers, and then we went outside. We heard... the Fakir, Frank Dallure, who played synths and a Turkish saxophone and something called the theremin, which is basically this circle through which runs a magnetic current. And when you sort of get your hands close to it, it makes these crazy synth sounds. It was awesome. And the interactive art installation was by Philippe Kuhl. He was showing behavioral machines you could sit on. And if you have a sufficiently punk rock behavior, it would massage you. But if you did not display punk rock tendencies, then you would get hit by the machine. So that was kind of interesting.
That's interesting. Did you sit down?
I sat down and nothing happened. So I don't know if that is a good or a bad thing, or if the thing just ran out of batteries.
I feel
it was
like
kind
you
of
have
at the end of the evening.
Deep punk rock somewhere inside you. And so it was confused. It couldn't figure out what to do, Bettina.
Yeah, I confused the heck out of it, which is good. So the evening started with the performance of the choreographers. They presented their piece, O Canada. And the dancers were Audrey Juteau, Peter Trotzmer, Katie Ward, and Thea Patterson. It was inside in the Darling Foundry, so it's a beautiful space. I've been there before for art installations. They are not really super set up for... accommodating an audience. They had random sort of seats and benches. But if you sat in the second row already, you couldn't really see the dancers. So if the Darling Foundry people are listening, it would be nice to sort of have a different arrangement of seats. And in the end, most people were just standing up. It's a wonderful backdrop, though, with the brick walls. And when the choreographers came on, they were all wearing paper masks featuring a nondescript, expressionless face that was drawn on with a black marker. And I thought it was kind of interesting. It was symbolizing the everyman. And also an interesting paradox in the piece about identity to not show your identity. The challenge, though, was that when you have this really expressionless face, like you cannot see the expression of the dancers. It puts a lot of focus on the body, and you need to rely on the body for expression and communication. And the dance style did not really lend itself to that. It wasn't very lyrical or expressive. It was more gestural and theatrical, I would say, more than contemporary dance. And again, it's a little paradoxical because they called the choreographers, and the choreography seemed to be somewhat incidental to the piece. There were a couple of nice sequences. There was my favorite and repeating motif, the canoe move, as I called it. You know, when you're doing if you ever steer a canoe, row a canoe, you kind of sit with one kneeling on one leg up, kind of this pose.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they did. And then sort of the arm movement was basically the paddling. And so they were gliding on one knee, so sliding across in unison with their masks on facing the audience. It was a very beautiful move. Hmm. Sort of you could just practically hear the water flowing in the background. And then there was some, it was supposed to be funny. There were some slight comical interludes, like a shoving match between the Anglo and the Franco dancer. One kept on shouting, Quebec, and the other one kept on shouting, Alberta, Ontario. That got the audience cracking up. But, you know, overall, I didn't really connect to it. It felt a little random to me.
What about it was random for you?
It sort of started off with them wearing the mask. They wore the mask for about half the piece, then they came off. There was a bit of dialogue, something about, you know, how Canada got founded. And then it seemed to sort of jump around. It wasn't really chronological. I didn't feel that the people really interacted with each other. I couldn't really tell what the piece was about. What about Canada were they trying to communicate?
So basically, what were they trying to say? That was just not clear for you. What are you trying to say?
I wasn't sure if they were happy with Canada, if they identified with Canada, if there were any particular points that were being made about being Canadian or about identity or search for identity. I couldn't, you know, they once in a while, they were like a little funny one-liners like, oh, I really like moose, you know, it tastes good fresh with onion rings. And there's like these little throwaway things. Yes, so they mentioned and referenced the moose, which is so Canadian, but it just stood there as a comment, and then they would dance again. It didn't really make sense to me. Not that everything needs to make sense, but it needs to have some sort of overarching storyline or some sort of message.
A through line. It was to feel like I'm missing a through line.
A little bit. And because the dance was really gestural, it was... that implies that if you're being theatrical, that implies that you have some sort of narrative or storyline. If you are going to be totally abstract, then I expect more dance moves that are interesting to watch, and that was missing a little bit for me. So I didn't emotionally connect to the piece. Maybe if somebody is more Canadian than I am, they will maybe get more references or connect more. But for me, it was nice. I'm not saying it wasn't good. It was nice. It was well performed. But I was not really connecting with it.
Besides the actual work itself, what was the quality of the performers like? What were the... There were four performers?
There were four performers. They were... they seemed to be very much in control of their bodies. I don't think they stretched themselves very much. I know that some of them, you know, have really good backgrounds, and it didn't really come out very much. Maybe because of the style of dancing, because there wasn't that much dance. It was just very theatrical, and there's some bits I liked. There was of the four, one of them was sitting down in a chair for a good part of the performance. It was kind of cool. That basically says, you know, I'm just the spectator here, like you are. Being Canadian just means sitting in a chair and being a couch potato. I mean, that's cute, but I felt there was a little bit lacking, and I didn't feel that they were giving their all, especially compared to the other two performances that followed, that overshadowed the choreographers a little bit.
So you're saying there were two other dance performances?
There were two other dance
performances. What were the other dance performances?
So the next one was called Soak, and that was a duo show by Caroline Laurent Bocage and Martin Messier.
Oh, how was that one?
That was really good. That one I really enjoyed and connected with it immediately. Basically two dancers in black pants and hoodies, and they came on hunched over with their hoodies down. You could barely see their faces. And on the bare stage, they were surrounded by a circle of lights which would flicker on and off to the sound of this pulsating soundtrack. And the choreography of the movements was super intense, like these jagged movements as though electric current was pulsating through the dancers, and then contrasted by complete stillness. And once in a while, one of the dancers would move close to the back of the stage in front of the brick wall, and then two lights would alternatively strobe and cast dancing shadows of the performer on the wall. So the performers were super still, but their shadows were dancing. This wonderful optical illusion, especially since they were all dressed in black and they already looked like dancing shadows. They also didn't connect with each other at all at the beginning. One would kind of crouch down, the other one would dance, and then they would take turns. And throughout the performance, they got closer and closer to each other. There was a sense of exploration of, you know, one dances off the other and they're kind of finding each other and they came together. My favorite move there was when the dancers embraced and one put the head in the hoodie of the other. So they looked like one body. They were sort of melted together, these two black figures. And that was absolutely beautiful.
It sounds like they were very skilled with creating beautiful imagery.
Yes, and also really like expressive, emotional dance moves, basically solo pieces because they would take turns. And in the end, the when they were dancing together, their duo, it was a little bit like nearly they were making out, you know, they were really exploring each other and reaching underneath the hoodies and underneath the pants. And in the end, one of the dancers just basically took her clothes off. And then she was dancing in the nude, just illuminated by these strobing lights, like this complete revelation of herself. So it was a really powerful piece and one that I enjoyed a lot. Interesting visually and emotionally, and had a good narrative. It was really tight and a really great piece. And then we went all outside again, had a little bit more musical interlude of the Fakir, and watched how Omas were doing with their massive paintings. And then the final piece was a solo piece by Olivier Dubois. It was called Pour tout l'or du monde, so for all the gold in the world. That was a really funny piece, and also one that I enjoyed a lot. It's kind of sort of cheeky and critical at the same time. And the basic message there was exploring the idea of that... it was the dance of the martyr. Like he was like this tragic figure who's made to dance and entertain and give his all. And he deconstructed the concept of the academic ballet dancer. But he both showed both ends of the spectrum. So the sort of bunhead ballet dancer who does the classical ballet, and at the other end of the spectrum, the pole dancer. So the piece started off with him sitting in the corner in a chair, dressed in a black suit, like a smoking suit. And they would play an excerpt of the Swan Lake. You know, this like classic piece, you know, the little signets are coming on in the line. But he would just sit there and not move. And they would play this like little, you know, this piece, this motif of Swan Lake. It would end, and then it would play again. And then he would get up, and as the little motif ended, he would sit down again. And then it would play again. So it would play over and over. And each time he would do a little more. Like he would go in the center of the stage, you know, give us all a saucy look like, huh, I'm the performer here. And then he would rush back to his chair and sit. His bum would like hit the chair exactly at the right moment each time. And then finally he started actually doing ballet dance moves. He's a really skilled dancer. You know, his leg would go up to his ear, and you know, but then he would get more and more into it and got raunchier and became like completely out of control. And you know, because you know, he felt like the audience loved him, and it was like the story of somebody who was drawn to dance and completely is swallowed up by this idea of being the prima ballerina. And then it all kind of came apart. It turned into chaos. He returned to his chair. He kind of sulked around a little bit. And then came the other part of the dance spectrum. He turned into a pole dancer. And for me, it kind of read like he fell from grace in the academic world, and now he's destined to be in the gentleman's club. He was wearing this this black suit, so he kind of stripped off this black suit. There he was, like bare-chested, doing a little Chippendale thing. But the thing is, he is actually a fairly heavy-set guy. I would say pudgy a little bit, not just a little bit pudgy. I mean, in shape, he danced as well, but he's not, doesn't have the typical dancer physique. So that also kind of upset the classical stereotype of the male dancer. And he did some awesome pole dancing moves. He was raunchy and the audience loved him. And, you know, but again, he got completely out of control.
This piece actually sounds really great.
It was a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So it was critical, but at the same time, he made fun of himself. So it was sort of bittersweet, always funny, and extremely energetic, and definitely worth watching. So Olivier Dubois did a great job.
Olivier
as well.
Dubois.
That's right.
What was the name of the piece?
Pour tout l'or du monde.
Okay.
And so that concluded then the evening. We all went outside. We sat on a bit of more punk rock machines, tried to make them do things. And it was a very nice evening.
Awesome. Would you go back to the festival? Did you enjoy
Yes.
Galier Improbable?
I did enjoy it. Especially I did enjoy the fact that there was more than one discipline being offered. So they were all avant-garde pieces. They were all short pieces, so you can take more risks. You don't have to sit there for an hour and a half and see something that you're not sure you like. So they were, you know, maybe half an hour pieces, 45-minute pieces. Then you go outside, you listen to some experimental music. So really, you feel totally stimulated. So I'm looking forward to it next year.
I feel that's definitely a strategy that any event that takes place at the Darling Foundry would probably have to use. It's just such a huge space, mm-hmm. that in order to really feel the life and like the power of just like the performers and whatever is happening, you need a lot of people. And in really to bring a lot of people, you need a lot of different types of artists and different types of works to draw in from different crowds and different audiences.
Well, actually what they did for this series of performances, they cut the Darling Foundry in half. So they had two stages. So there was, you know, we were sitting to the right of the building. Then we had the interlude. The music was outside. It was also a beautiful evening. So we were all outside, mm-hmm. listening to the music, and en masse were painting. You know, they were set up in the wall opposite. So that space where the picnic tables and all that, people could mill about. And then we came back in, and then we saw the other half of the space. So we went to the left. So basically you didn't have to fill the entire space with one stage. It was basically two stages and the space outside.
Awesome.
It makes me miss Nuit Blanche. Sounds like that in the sense.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It wasn't as crowded and crazy as New York.
Right. Yeah.
Though it was really full. I mean, not everybody had seats. It seemed to be part of the concept that you'd have people standing or sitting on the floor.
Mm-hmm. So.
So I would say keep going. Les Escales Improbables. Maybe, you know, consider putting on your website like a programming grid so people actually know what's playing when, because I would have loved to announce the other two dance shows last week had I known that they were all playing at the same time.
Yeah. So this, I believe this was their eighth season. So
wow.
That's pretty good. Eight is it's a lot of seasons.
Yeah. They're doing something right.
It's 2:24. I think we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to head into some interesting discussions about Anglophone artists in Montreal and movement, choreography, dance in the theater world. So we'll be back. You are listening to Movement Museum here on CKUT 90.3.
The Center 2110 for Gender Advocacy invites you to our 2011 fall event series entitled Another Word for Gender, an intro to feminist organizing and action. Start the school year off right by fighting gender oppression. The events range from fertility awareness to abortion access, Trans 101, sexual assault awareness on campus. There will be discussions, workshops, a walking tour, a bus to Ottawa for the 2011 Walk for Justice rally, film screenings, and an annual march and vigil for missing and murdered Native women. Keynote speaker Andrea Smith will give a talk on systemic violence against Native women and First Nations land struggles. Events will take place from September 15th to October 4th. For the full schedule and description of all the events, go to center2110.org, a CKUT co-presentation.
Fire Group and CKUT present the North American premiere screening of Ini, Sigur Rós's live concert film, on September 27th at Le National. Sigur Rós performed their last show in London at the Royal Alexandra Theatre in 2008 before their well-documented indefinite hiatus. Directed by Vincent Morissette, who brought you Arcade Fire's film Miroir Noir, Ini captures the band at their creative peak. Experience Sigur Rós's Ini September 27th at Le National.
CKUT presents Moving Picture Radio. Tune in at 90.3 FM on the Wednesday morning after at 8:30 a.m. Moving Picture Radio is a weekly 30-minute broadcast produced by a collective of cinema lovers at CKUT. Featuring in-studio discussions with frontline documentary filmmakers, interviews with experimental film creators, in-depth reviews on cinema culture. Moving Picture Radio brings you cutting-edge broadcasting on cinema in a digital age. Tune in Wednesdays from 8:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. for Moving Picture Radio.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
My kind of music! I love it! I live with it! I sleep with it! I eat it! It's mine!
We're back here on Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3. It is 2:27, and I believe it is now for dance history. We're just saying that today is Bettina's show today.
No kidding.
So Bettina, what do we have for dance? Who do we have for dance history?
Today, we are saluting Sir Frederick William Mullondin Ashton.
Wow, who's that?
He was born on the 17th of September 1904 and passed away on the 18th of October 1988. He was a leading international dancer and choreographer who is most noted as the founding choreographer of the Royal Ballet in London, but also worked as a director and choreographer of opera, film, and theater reviews. Ashton was born in Guayaquil in Ecuador, in the artistic neighborhood called Las Peñas, the original founding site of the city. When he was 13, he witnessed a life-changing event when he attended a performance by the legendary Anna Pavlova at the Municipal Theater in Lima, Peru. He was so impressed from that day on, he was determined that he would become a dancer. However, his late introduction to dancing and his slight physique made it a difficult ambition to fulfill. Luckily for him, Marie Rambert, the owner of her own, the Marie Rambert dance troupe, discovered Ashton's aptitude for choreography and allowed him to choreograph his first ballet, The Tragedy of Fashion, in 1926, starting a tremendously successful career as a choreographer. He began his career with the Ballet Rambert and then rose to fame with Vic Wells Ballet, which was later to become the Sadler's Wells Ballet, before it was designated the Royal Ballet. He became its resident choreographer in 1930. Ashton worked with ballet icons such as Margot Fonteyn, Rudolf Nureyev, and George Balanchine. His New York Times obituary states, Sir Frederick did much to develop a distinctly British balletic style, characterized by elegance, lyricism, and graciousness. A versatile choreographer, he created ballets that drew on or evoked literary sources, that told stories, and that were simple responses to a musical score. To each of his dances, Sir Frederick brought a distinctly musical and humane perspective and an attention to detail that also helped to define the national style. Mikhail Baryshnikov, director of the American Ballet Theatre, said of Ashton, "Working with Sir Fred was one of the most stimulating and inspiring times I have spent in the theatre. Beyond his extraordinary and replaceable talent, he was a man of nuance, wit, and cosmopolitan charm." Ashton received the Queen Elizabeth II Coronation Award for the Royal Academy of Dance in 1959. In 1962, he was knighted for his services to ballet. He was admitted into the French Légion d'Honneur in the same year. He was made a commander of the Order of the Dannebrog in 1963 and was awarded the gold medal from the Carina Aria Foundation in Sweden in 1972. An impressive list of honors. So
I like the one about being knighted for ballet.
Isn't that awesome? Yes. So happy birthday, Sir Frederick William Mallandain Ashton.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you. He's very accomplished.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking there's so many artists out there, like, let's just, like, you know, say dancers who come up in dance history that are so accomplished, and sometimes nobody has really, you know, heard of them so much.
Yeah, not, you know, Sir Frederick Ashton. It's not something, you know, you hear a lot talking about, or, you know, and he shaped the character of British dance. Mm. You should know him as well as Nureyev, but you don't.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy to shine a little light once a week on somebody who's cool, and we should all, you know, keep in mind and maybe be inspired by. You know, if you really try hard, you too can be knighted for ballet.
I want to be knighted.
I like who was it? Who had the 17 honorary bachelors?
Oh, doctorates.
Doctorates?
Yes. Oh, darn it. Woman.
Twyla.
Yes, Twyla Tharp.
There
yes.
We go.
Yes.
Shoot 17. For the moon, right?
No kidding.
I want 18.
18 honorary doctorates. That's quite amazing.
And yeah. Yeah, she had a long laundry list of accomplishments, which is just so impressive. I mean, it does two things. It makes me feel like I'm completely useless and I've done nothing with my life. But it's also really inspiring to know that people who work in the field of art can still be recognized, you know, with major achievements.
Yeah, it's true.
Major honors.
So, let's talk about Elan, Bettina.
Yeah,
Bettina's on the board, right? You were on the board of Elan?
Yeah, just a brand new member. The AGM was a couple of weeks ago, and they're having a whole influx of young board members. So I'm just starting my gig with them.
So for those who do not know what Elan is, can you give us a summary or what is this organization? What does it stand for?
So the English Language Arts Network is an organization that supports English language artists in Quebec. The problem sometimes with being Anglophone in Quebec is that Quebec culture defines itself by its language. It used to be a religion or, you know, economics or whatever. It's not that anymore. Now, if you're thinking about what is Quebec culture, it's because it is Francophone. So what happens to all the Anglophone artists who are making major contributions to Quebec arts and culture? Where do they go? What do they need extra help, either being recognized enough? Can they be financially supported? Is there funding? And so Elan is a group that is dedicated to supporting networking opportunities for English language artists. So they have these monthly or now bi-monthly schmoozers, which are great. You get to meet other artists, and also it covers all disciplines. So it's dance, it's theater, it's drama, it's music.
So the question is, these schmoozers and the support that they offer, is it to integrate the Anglophone with the Francophone more? So in terms of, you know, these schmoozers, are they just other English language artists, or like how do they integrate the French and English?
So at the schmoozers, you will meet other English speaking artists, because it's so much easier to schmooze when you can speak the language.
Je suis cool, t'es cool aussi.
There is one of the many things that Elan does is also integration and building bridges between the Anglo and Franco communities, but they do that through engagement in things like Culture Montréal and Diversité Artistique Montréal. So they team up with other cultural organizations and see if we can collaborate and integrate ourselves that way. There's also a program that brings Anglophone artists into the regions of Quebec. We're starting this as of like now, and this is a program that's going to be going for 2 years. And so we're bringing professional development and mentorship from Anglo artists into the regions. And then, of course, there'll be, you know, cross-pollination between the English-speaking and French-speaking artists and the audience. There's also, besides the networking, and one of the things that I really think were a fantastic project, it's called RAVE. It's called a project Recognizing Artists Enfin Visibles. And this is to promote the work of artists for greater recognition and visibility, specifically promoting English-speaking artists in all disciplines. So last year was on a jury. Actually, we thought this was going to be like this little project, you know, shine a light on a couple of really interesting Quebec artists, give them a platform, promote them more. And there were so many submissions that actually Elan had to split up the list of submissions into discipline and get a jury together for each discipline, because there are so many great Anglophone artists in Quebec. And Anglophone doesn't just mean, you know, the Anglos who are Quebecers who have always been Anglos, but also people who come here from other provinces, people who come here from overseas and who are most comfortable speaking in English. A lot of Elan members or people who call themselves Anglo artists, they also speak English. They probably speak three languages, you know, like whatever language the country is where they're from or their family heritage, plus French, plus English. So it makes for a very interesting group. And the RAVE project is really interesting. It combines 150 emerging and established English-speaking artists. And if you go on the website for Elan, which is www.quebec-elan.org, you can see profiles of these artists online, videos, really nice, well-presented, well-edited edited video clips. And they even have histories of all the major artistic disciplines. So there's a history for dance and the role of dance in Quebec and Montreal. And soon this will come out even in a book form. So next week, Elan is hosting what is called the Summit of the Arts, which is an invitation-only symposium where artists and people in the cultural field get together to discuss the state of the arts, like where we are right now as artists in general, as English-speaking artists in Quebec in particular.
Did I understand that you can also partake in that online if you're not one of the 120 artists?
Yes, and I think also especially on Saturday, there's going to be a lot of discussion. I think it's a Saturday session that's online.
Okay.
But if you go on the website and you click on Summit for the Arts, there will be more information for that. And the RAVE project will be published there as a book by Guernica Press. So that is a very cool project. If you look in the profiles under dance, there's George Stamos, Roger Sinha, and Gino Conda Barbuto, which is a really cool video. I didn't know that dancer, and now I do, and I'm very glad. The rep, so basically on the board, we have a whole bunch of people, and we have two reps for each discipline. So I'm actually the rep for visual arts. If you want to know who the reps are for dance, that's Gabriel Martin and Andrew Tay. So those guys, if you see them around, you know, poke them and ask them about Elan, because what we reps do is we are kind of conduits. We talk to people in our communities, see what the problems are, what are the issues, what kind of ideas are people bringing, you know, what are obstacles, what are opportunities, and then we can bring that to Elan and see if we, this would spark a project, if we can ask for funding. One of Elan's missions is also advocacy. This involves trips to Ottawa to see ministers. You know, we apply pressure, we make suggestions. So if if you're interested, look on the Elan website, see who your reps are.
And you can become a member.
You can become a member of Elan, yes.
What's that process of becoming a member?
Totally easy. You go to the website. It's, I think, $25 for a year. Mm. And you sign up. They review your candidacy, you know, just to make sure that you're an artist and all. But that's sort of fairly automatic. The membership also entitles you to put your profile up on the Elan website. This is a really nicely designed website. You can see who else is up there, who has their profiles on there. It's very interesting to browse the website and find out who else is active in your community. It gives you more visibility as well. They once in a while sort of randomly highlight people from the profile. So you go to the Elan website and suddenly, you know, under the dance, there'll be somebody highlighted. And, you know, you can sort of check out those profiles. You can upload examples of your work. Also, membership gives you access to the schmoozers. So that's always really a lot of fun. And, you know, various other activities that Elan does, like the Rave Project or the Summit for the Arts. So these are people who really, they do a lot. It's not just an association where you pay $25 and then you just sit back in your seat. Oh, and the newsletter. They do a great monthly newsletter that includes a lot of opportunities like grant applications, people are looking for, you know, auditions, also news from the members themselves. So this is a really handy resource as well.
That sounds like such a great project. I know that, you know, it's an extra challenge for an Anglophone to be working in Montreal as an artist. And it seems like a little bubble of fresh air in the sea of French. It's just a little bit easier to kind of figure things out and get your questions answered and be heard. And
yeah, just also to be heard, especially if you're Anglophone because you're coming from outside the province. It's just hard to, you know, get a foot on the ground here.
And there are a lot of artists who come from so many different places,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
into Montreal, because Montreal really is just like a thriving hotbed of culture and arts, and it's just an amazing place to be and to live if you want to be an artist. So there's definitely a lot.
Yeah,
and I'm one.
And and I'm one. You
Me
know,
too.
From overseas. Like, look at the three of us. We're prime examples.
Yeah, for sure. This was made for us.
Yeah, and what I also like is that it's not just that you're meeting people from different parts of the country, and also, you know, Quebec itself and overseas, which just gives you interesting, you know, different variety of perspectives, but also that you're meeting people from all kinds of disciplines. And nowadays, you know, you don't just work in your own discipline. You know, you're a dancer, but you're also involved in installation art, or, you know, drama and theater and music all collaborate. So it's a great opportunity for artists to collaborate on projects and inspire each other and support each other.
So I have a question for you, Bettina. Being that you are from Germany, how long have you been in Montreal? Because I want to ask you, you know, about the challenges you may have met as an Anglophone, you know, as an English-speaking artist living in Montreal. What has that experience been for you like?
It was a bit of a challenge at first.
How long have you been living here?
I've been living here now for about 8 years. I'm now on my ninth year. I came not knowing anybody at all in Montreal. Just kind of parachuted in. My ex is from Montreal, so, you know, but he's a banker, so that was a completely different set of people. And basically, I had to do the footwork, you know, started exploring the city, going to all kind of different galleries and trying to find out where all the venues are. And it's a slow process because art is about relationships, not so much about the product. It's not just about the objects that you made or the performance. It's also to get to know the people who create. And, you know, it took a while for me to insert myself into the cultural scene here.
What challenges did you meet moving into the French culture in Quebec?
Yeah, I found that not having studied at Concordia is a bit of a hurdle. Because everybody seems to know everybody else through Concordia. And also French. I learned French. I speak French. I write French, but I don't write French well.
Before you moved here?
Before I moved here and still today. Okay. I struggle with the accents, and very often, because French is my third language, what happens when I write French, I write German grammar with some weird French sort of half translated into English kind of thing. And then I have to read it through again and try to make it French sounding. And I have friends who proofread my stuff, but everybody seems to have a different take on what exactly French grammar should be like. And if you have to write an artist statement or any kind of proposal or submission, taking on that third language was really something that I struggled with. And now I'm sort of, you know, friends with people that I know who speak French well and write well, who are willing to help me out a little bit once in a while.
So as you were, you know, breaking into the art scene, did you encounter, you know, some of the discrimination? Did you feel discrimination in terms of just like, I can't speak French as well? And certain, you know, areas where maybe you're trying to break in, maybe you're trying to like connect to a group of artists or an organization or whatever it is, did you feel certain things that were kind of like, okay,
yeah,
separated you?
It is a little cliquish. And it took me a while to figure that out, like which people gravitate toward each other and what the cliques really are. Because I'm in the visual arts, when you create a painted object or a sculpture or an installation, it doesn't require language in a way that maybe if I was a filmmaker or an author, that would be more of a struggle for me. When I talked to Andrew Tay, who's the dance rep for Elan, I asked him, so, you know, he's been on the board for years, so what are your challenges? He goes, I do dance. You know, people move through space. That communicates in English, French, Kiswahili, whatever. So there are a couple of artistic disciplines where it is a lot easier to show your work and have it understood by an audience. Mm-hmm. So I did have challenges just communicating to gallery owners and explaining my work to people who drop in. But I felt that it was my challenge, and I decided to move here, and I just need to pull my socks up and learn French.
I feel like as a dancer, a lot of the challenges for me are the networking. I can network with the English community fairly well, but it's just like you were saying about schmoozing, it's just that extra challenge to build a relationship with somebody who's francophone, because when you're creating a piece, you need to be able to communicate properly, and there's a lot you can do communicating with your body, but you still need to be able to say like, Sunday at 3, will you be there? Like, or explain like an abstract emotional state you want to have like brought out in the dancer, or just say something intelligent about someone's work where they are. You know, you can share ideas and you can grow and you can learn, and all that is a little bit harder when you're, you know, taking all your energy to figure out what the right word is.
It's very demanding to explain art,
yeah,
even in English.
Yeah.
Doing it in another language to get those subtle nuances to really transmit an idea that is sometimes so ephemeral and hard to pin down anyway, which is why you dance or why you make a painting in the first place, because there really are no words. That is really tricky. And the same when somebody explains their work to me, they're using a lot of, you know, the jargon of the discipline. And maybe what artists need is a vocabulary course that talks about, you know, the artist statement lingo.
You just made me think of when we did our lighting design workshop from Concordia, because the whole idea of the workshop was to teach us how to talk to technicians. Yeah. And it was brilliant. Like, it was just a course in translation from our, like, dancer language to the lighting designer language.
Yeah. Anyway. The other thing that I always question too, because I've been living here for 5 years, my French is not that great. So on my part, I have to put in the effort to learn the language in order to really like communicate and to immerse myself more. And apart from that too, is what I always question is in terms of grant writing, you know, that's the one thing that I always wonder, will there be like some sort of discrimination against a grant that may be articulating in terms of English or French? And maybe it's not even a conscious discrimination in terms of language, but just the fact that maybe a jury who is reading it might not understand the English grant, the proposal as in the same way. So I always question that. And maybe it's a good idea as an artist living here to know a good translator.
I think so, because that is actually something that we discuss on the Elan board and at the Schmoozes a lot. That is something that comes up a lot. You do have the right to submit your grant proposal in English if you so choose. But exactly what you said, especially since culture in Quebec, the cultural identity in Quebec is expressed through French, through being French, through performing in French. You come with an English grant proposal, it's like you're not really a Quebecer, and why should we support you? That is a problem, and I think yes, a good translator is a solution to this.
On the flip side, I find it difficult sometimes to get information. You know, I can figure out where a show is, when it is, what the deadline for the grant is, what they want from me, but there's details that I miss. Sometimes with the RQD and other resources out there, there is no English translation. You have to make do with the French. And I feel like I'm losing it. Like, I get the gist, but I want the details.
That is actually something Elan pushes for through collaboration with these other art associations in Quebec, like the RAF, which is for the visual arts. They used to be only in French. And through working with Elan, they've now opened up and they are also publishing some information in English. And that was a huge step and really made it easier for Anglo artists to have access to the information they provide and all the opportunities.
Well, this is definitely an ongoing discussion. And it's definitely really important, but it's good to know that there is this organization for those who are English-speaking artists living in Montreal. So I would highly suggest, you know, anyone who has not checked it out to check out the website, see if it could benefit and support what you're doing here and your needs, and, you know, possibly become a member. I think it's really good to have that.
I have one more question. In terms of, like, level of French comprehension, is there anyone that would benefit more or less from it? Like, if you're almost completely bilingual, is it still going to help you? If you know nothing at all, will it still be useful? Like,
it's not just the question of helping you out with the French. It is more, how do you identify yourself? Do you identify yourself as an allophone or anglophone? And, you know, is English what you speak at home? And that's like how you feel. And that is the group that you kind of gravitate to and feel that you belong to, the anglophones. Like I said, everybody on this board pretty much is bilingual. I have no problem, you know, talking to people in French, but I still identify more as an anglophone. And that this is why the group is for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
You're cool. Welcome.
We just have a few announcements before the end of our show. There's a really interesting opportunity for performance for artists in all fields, but for dancers as well. And it's, I believe, the Yes Expo.
Yeah, Yes Art Expo. It's happening in December. It's it's the Youth Employment Services, and they're doing an expo for artists, and they're doing a call for submissions. It's an open call for submissions. If you've got film and media, music, theater, visual arts and writing, digital arts, fashion, film, they just want everything. And the deadline is September 22nd. So you can go to their website at yes What is it? Is it Yes Montreal?
Lululu.
YesMontreal.ca, and look for their call for artists form, and you can get involved. I believe it's happening in Old Montreal, December 1st and 2nd. So yeah, if you've got a piece or something in the works, looks like a good opportunity to show it.
And from what I understand is that this expo is really about networking. Really also, I know that Yes is helps artists a lot in terms of developing entrepreneurial skills. So for those out there who want to network, who want to bring their artwork out there a little bit more of a push, I highly recommend you apply for this and get your face out there, because it's not just going to be, you know, dance, but it's going to be artists from all spectrums, and it's really just a big networking opportunity. So check it out. Don't let this one slip by if you've got work and if you've got things that you want to promote. The other thing is, we've got a dance calendar just to give announcements to a few shows that are coming up. I think September 14th, which I guess opened yesterday, and running until the 23rd at Agora de la Danse, is a piece called Avril et le mois de la plus cruel by Jocelyn Monpetit. That show is again at Agora de la Danse.
Yep, that's right. It's tickets range from $18 to $26. And there's a Meet the Choreographer night on the 15th, so that's today.
Oh, that's today. So if you want to meet Jocelyn Monpetit for their usual talk back, check the show out tonight. There's also the annual Danse Boussinière, which is a range of artists. It happens every year at it's a production of Tangente. It's running today until the 18th, and I believe there's also a matinee show.
The 18th is the matinee show at 4. The 15th, 16th, and 17th, it's an 8:30 p.m. show.
Mm-hmm. And who are the artists in there, Allison?
Isabelle Boulanger, Stéphanie Fromentin, Rémi Lorraine Houlette, and Evelyn Laforest. That looks like a duo. Jade Marquis and Hélène Mestier.
Oh.
That's Classe 2011.
Class 2011 Danse Boussinière happens every year, and it's at Tangente, this the venue where
No, it's actually at Monument National.
Okay, Tangente is no longer
They're doing a couch surfing year.
Okay.
So Tangente still has a program, but none of them are going to be in the space formerly called Tangente. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have to check for updates. They're going to jump around a bit.
Yeah. And then we have another show, actually, which is on the cover of What is the cover?
Voir.
The Voir. Beautiful.
I think we've talked about this one like every episode.
Yeah,
for, like,
yeah, we have actually.
We're pretty excited.
There is four shows only, September 18th and 19th, and then 25th and 26th. The show is called Danse à 10. Various artists who create on a solo on dancers. It's also an Agora de la Danse production, but it's actually at the Gentleman's Club. And a lot of different artists. Hey, can you name a few, Allison?
Okie dokie. Marie Belland, Nicolas Katin, Melie Demers, Stephanie, oh my goodness, Gladzwajewski. I am sorry about that, Stephanie. Frédéric Gravel, Benoît Lachambe, Jérémy Niel, and Manon Oligny.
Oh, Manon Oligny, yeah.
Oligny.
Yeah, those are the choreographers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it looks like an amazing show. You should definitely get tickets because I think it will sell out.
Yeah, and the show starts at 7, but doors open at 6, so it might be a little bit of a hangout, grab a drink kind of situation. Yeah. I don't know.
Cool.
But I assume that's what you do for an hour.
So, that is it for today. It is 2:58, and my name is Jen Doan.
Oh, can I interrupt for one more last minute announcement? If you are interested in theater as well as dance and like a little bit of theater with a little bit of movement in it, which we didn't get to talking about today, but was inspired by the fact that Equus is playing at the Segal Center and it's fabulous.
Oh, I saw it last night.
And yes, you should definitely go check it out. The times are absolutely all over the place. So check out the Segal Center website to get specific times. But it's Equus and it's playing there right now. And it's amazing.
Awesome. Do you know if it was the same mise en scène as they had at the Rialto? Is it the same production?
Not at all. I saw the one at the Rialto as well.
Okay.
This is grander. It's more polished. And I couldn't go into more detail. But anyway, okay. just
Check
next
it out.
Week.
Cool. Not to be missed. Okay.
Yeah, Equus. So here we go, guys. Movement Museum here on CKUT 90.3. Come back next week, 2 to 3, every Thursday here on CKUT. I'm Jen Doan. I'm with Allison Burns and Bettina Forger. Come back and join us next week. And also check out all of our archive shows if you feel like you've missed any interviews or topics we've discussed on the CKUT website. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.